Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
Well, Nate, let's start with the Cody promo. Number of things to talk about from tonight's show, but that stood out to me. Cody's so good at delivering that material. I don't know how much of the digs that rock are based on original tensions that have been healed or original tensions that continue to exist, but it is making for just edgy content. And I also think Cody does a good job. Maybe I should save this as a second talking point. But he is doing a really good job working in insider language in a way that doesn't set off my eye rolls, like when it has been tried so long the last 25 yeah. years in wrestling. Because, you know, heel is not – it's just a thing. It's just a word. It's a word that predates or coexists, at least. Probably predates professional wrestling using it as the word for a bad guy. Doesn't seem like he's trying to get himself over as much as sort of acknowledging, having a sense of the room and knowing that this generation, especially ticket buying fans at WWE shows, a big percentage of them are going to like go, oh yeah, he's not working us. He's confiding in us. So, but mostly just the shots he took at The Rock and even citing Brian Gewirtz. This is just fun. This is reminding me of the John Cena Rock situation where, you know, essentially Rock said, bring it on. And Cena's like, really? And Rock's like, yeah, I can handle it. And after a few weeks, Rock was like, crap, I don't want to tell Cena to stop, but he's kicking my ass. And after last Friday's Rock performance, which was quite counterproductive in multiple ways, entertaining, but counterproductive, this was a work of art promo-wise. So, Nate, I said a lot. What do you think?
No, I couldn't agree more. I mean, I had a couple friends with me tonight watching Raw with me, and yeah, I looked at both of them. And I'm like, I bet you that's the first time Brian Gewirtz has ever been name dropped on TV. Like you said, kind of blending the kind of like you know, the story with reality. He's doing a fantastic job with that. His delivery. You know, even like you said, down to kind of just the edgier comments that he's making. I mean, you know, obviously this is, you know, PG product and things like that. So you kind of got to work within those confines. But, you know, both he and The Rock, for that matter, have been kind of like, you know, towing the line of what they maybe should or shouldn't say, or, you know, what can they slip past the censors, if you will. I think it's been effective. Yeah, I don't know if it necessarily might undercut some of the other talent on the show, but that's neither here nor there right now. But I think, you know, it's very, very effective. You know, tonight, I agree. I think that was a masterclass on how to do a promo. I mean, Cody, he's got the crowd in the palm of his hand for the entirety of it. He's speaking truths in and out of both, you know, in story and in. You know, kind of like in real life, you know, throughout the whole thing. So I'm in agreement with you. It was, I think they're doing a great job positioning Cody right now to be that organic babyface that they've just so desperately wanted since they're really Stone Cold.
When you watch that, are you thinking, I think there's like legit negative feelings towards Rock. And, you know, and Paul Heyman works with Cody on this stuff, and Heyman was part of this. Like, I imagine Heyman is contributing to this, which, if so, is fascinating because, like, is he just going for, I want to fool all the marks and think this is real? You know, not that he'd use that language. You know what I mean? That kind of carny old school.
Yeah.
Or is this like, we had this great storyline going, and then Rock steps in and whines behind the scenes about, I'm a big deal. I should save WWE. And everyone's offended by that because WWE didn't need him to save it. And now they get to talk about it on the air. And what can Rock do? Whine behind the scenes and prove them right? Or maybe he already has. He's got too much pride to do that. Or maybe he lacks the self-awareness because he's pulled in so many different directions and they just are having fun. So, I mean, it's just an interpretation of what you see on the screen. And I guess to a degree, you know, reporting or what I'm intimating my thoughts are, but what do you think is going on here?
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, in truth be told, I've been moving the past couple weeks. So it's like, listening to, you know, podcasts and, you know, reading up on kind of insider things in wrestling the past couple of weeks has been a little null compared to what it usually is. But so I don't know if there really is some actual animosity or anything between the two. But I mean, I would imagine there's got to be a little bit, you know, to a point. I mean, you know, Cody had this, you know, no pun intended, this story that he's been trying to tell for, I mean, what, the better part of, you know, a year, year and a half at this point, maybe even really, I guess, since he's returned to WWE. You know, and then to kind of have that taken away from you just because The Rock wants to, you know, it's the right time for The Rock to come back and for Rock and Roman, you know, to take place. I can see that kind of causing some animosity and, you know, you just try to stay professional and whatnot, but I mean, that's gotta eat at you a little bit. You know, I think probably at this point with the way that they have kind of outlined WrestleMania night one and night two, you know, Cody is going to, I mean, the way it seems, he's going to be finishing that story. You know, and if that is the case, then I can't imagine that at this point that, you know, any negative feelings that he may have harbored prior to that, you know, I can't imagine he's really, you know, harboring them anymore.
Yeah, my thinking is there's legit tension, and that it continues to exist. And I think Rock's poor focus on Friday SmackDown on getting heel heat because he's a heel, and just sort of wanting to entertain. But as I wrote in my analysis in my SmackDown TV report on Friday, I didn't sense at any point Rock was actually going for booze. I think he was trying to entertain and show everybody how entertaining he can be. But I don't think he built up the match or the story of the match. And I talked about that on the post show on my hotline too. Just like the more I talked about it, the more it's like this was just Rock kind of wanting to do his thing and be the Rock. And, you know, he's a heel, but the crowd's chanting Rocky. Like, it's just, I don't know. And it seems like the digs, even the prior Monday that, that Seth and, Cody were taking, they felt like they were sincere, you know? And so this is just fun, you know? And, I don't think Roman and Cody are going to go in that territory. I think that's just going to be a good promo in part because I don't think Rock's going to be part of it. So it can actually be a clean, well thought out segment with Heyman obviously working his magic behind the scenes and Cody and Roman, you know, being their astute selves with their eye on the target, which is, you know, get the right kind of crowd heat. I think SmackDown should be really good, but Friday, I mean, you know, people could be entertained by The Rock, but I mean, when Cody turns around and says, Rock, does it look like we need saving? You know, it's a sellout crowd without Rock advertised, and it's 9 sellouts in a row, as Michael Cole touted tonight. You know, that you can just, I don't know. I feel strongly that there's some public things being said that are meant to sting a little and get under the skin. And basically, as I wrote my TV report tonight during Raw, I will bet on Heyman and Cody over Rock and Gewurz every week when it comes to who's going to win this battle if it is a bit of a pissing contest, to put it bluntly.
Yeah, I could see that, you know, and even I was talking with Kelly when he and I filled in for you a couple weeks ago for the post show after SmackDown, and I feel like ever since Rock has come back, I don't want to say he's a shell of his former self, because that is a far stretch from what I'm trying to say, but I feel like he's almost missed a step a little bit. Like every once in a while, it's, I don't know, some of the comebacks aren't as snappy as they used to be, or maybe just a little corny or something. I don't know exactly how I'm trying to phrase it, but you know, they kind of like hasn't hit as this version of Hollywood Rock hasn't quite hit as good as the original version of Hollywood Rock, I guess, in my eyes anyway. And I know there was a couple callers that felt the same way. I can't remember what Kelly's opinion was, but, you know, and
who cares what Kelly thinks?
You know what? I'm going to quote you on that. but yeah, you know, if it has been Rock and Brian, you know, writing, which I'm assuming it probably has been, Heyman and Cody, I put my money on them. Put my money on them for sure.
Yeah. This is fun stuff. It's fun stuff. All right, let's pause and formally introduce ourselves. We'll talk more about this segment. There's other things to get into, including just some specifics about what we're talking about, and also Becky Lynch and Nia Jax in the main event, last woman standing match, and the show closes with the Rhea Ripley Becky Lynch face off. We can kind of talk about the Nia Jax story and tag tournament developments, and then Drew McIntyre continuing to make sure he's not overshadowed with everything going on with the other stuff Seth is involved in. So we'll get into all that. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, March 18th, 2024. I'm Wade Keller, host of the show, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly Newsletter and the website pwtorch.com, and the host of various podcasts, including the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Shows, covering Raw, Dynamite, SmackDown, and some collisions, and also the Wade Keller Podcast, which tomorrow will feature co-host Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net. So get your questions in if you want to have a chance to be part of the show and setting the agenda for what we talk about. You can ask a question, make a comment, push back on something you've heard either of us say. Whatever it is, send it in. WadeKellerPodcast@gmail.com. And by the way, that's the email address if you're live streaming tonight's show and want to participate, and it's easier to email than call for you. WadeKellerPodcast@gmail.com. We're here to talk about Raw, and the other voice you hear is Nate Lindberg. He is a PW Torch contributor, writing and talking about NXT primarily. That is his beat, including on Tuesday nights on the PWT Talks NXT edition of the PW Torch Daily Cast. Nate, welcome back to the co-host chair.
No, thank you for having me. Always always a pleasure to come and talk some Raw with you.
Absolutely. So let's give out the phone number here. If you want to be part of tonight's show, the number is 347-215-8558, 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1. We'd love to hear from you, first-time callers, regular callers, lapsed callers, whoever you are, male, female, otherwise. Come on, let's hear from you. Definitely want to get your thoughts on what you think is going on with this war of words with Cody and Seth and The Rock in particular, and what your take is, and if you're enjoying it or find it distracting or whatever, and anything else from Raw. You can also email us, as I just said, so you can call or email. Either way works for us. You can always find the live stream link at pwtorch.com in my TV reports. At pwtorch.com, click on my live TV coverage of Raw, Dynamite, SmackDown, and at the top and bottom, there's a link that'll launch the live stream. We start roughly 5 minutes after the shows go off the air. And I also encourage you to read my TV reports while you're watching the TV show so that you can perhaps respond to some of the things that I've written in terms of my analysis of the segments, the matches, and the interviews and such, so we can kind of get a back and forth going. That also includes the phone number and email if you're looking for a reminder on that. You can also go to WadeKellerPostShow.com and navigate to the live stream if that works better for you. All right, so let's get rolling with the rest of the show, and we'll begin with area code 440. 440, go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
Good evening. This is Steve calling from Cleveland, Ohio.
It's Steve. Yeah, Steve from Cleveland. I knew that. Steve, welcome. What's on your mind about Raw tonight?
Well, I have to tell you, I liked a lot of what I saw from Raw. Some of the stuff I did not like, but maybe I'm nitpicking. What I'm happy about is that I think that I've got some faith that whoever's running the show maybe kind of knows what they're doing. And I, as an example, I take the fact that I'm a giant Creed Brothers fan, big fan of them, and I really did not want them to lose to DIY. But I think I trust the management enough to know that their time is coming. But maybe that time is just not WrestleMania 40. Yeah.
So I'm a big Creed Brothers fan too. And Nate, you've seen a lot of their work. I do have to say, in my TV report, I expressed that I thought the match was overly ambitious and looked funky in spots, which is a nice way of saying it looked like a car wreck and a mess at different times. Even commentators brought that up. Jason Powell over at ProWrestling.net thought it was one of the Creed Brothers' better performances. And I get that, too, because there were some really good parts of that match. But I thought, and I want to be clear, I'm not even necessarily – and this is where I'm going to lean on Nate here. I'm not even blaming the Creed. It felt just like it was plotted out to be overly ambitious. And the Creeds don't need to do a ton of complicated two-on-one and two-on-two, all these complex spots with reversals. And to me, and I don't know this, but to me it came across as if Gargano and Ciampa had all these ideas. And it's just not the Creed style of match, or it's not something that they're entirely comfortable with yet. And so, frankly, I kind of thought the match was more of a mess than a success, even if it had its good moments, too. It's one of those matches where I think some people are watching going, that was so exciting, but it was just one convoluted, overly plotted spot after another. And I thought the finishing sequence was really good. And I think that could have carried the match if they just would have gotten more down to the basics the rest of the way. With one-on-one moves and tags, just traditional stuff, and trusted themselves to be able to hold the audience, not having to just do – and I was critical of even Will Ospreay's match. Like, I felt that was – it was just too much, one after another after another after another, and it was smoother and much, much better athletically. But there were just so many big spots that should have been finishes that were kicked out of. In this match, I just don't think they pulled off some of the athleticism. So, Nate, I want your thoughts on this match and my thoughts on it versus Jason's, but also the Creed's track record compared to Gargano and Ciampa. And if you're kind of with me that maybe this felt like more of a Gargano-Ciampa match than a Creed match?
Oh, I would 100% agree with you there. Like, it definitely felt like something that DIY would have probably had a lot of the ideas for, and Creed's trying to execute on it. So I've got a unique perspective here on this, because I personally was kind of in Wade's camp here, where in a way I thought, now I still really enjoyed the match, but there were definitely some of the botches and just kind of some missed timings and things like that were certainly noticeable throughout the course of the match. However, like I said earlier, I had two friends of mine that they're both into wrestling, but one of them, he's more of an AEW guy. He hasn't really watched WWE and outside of NXT with me here and there. He doesn't really watch WWE very often. And then my other friend, Josh, he likes wrestling, but really doesn't keep up with it anymore. So they'd actually never seen the Creed Brothers before. Both of them are familiar with DIY, but never seen the Creeds before.
Yeah,
they loved this match. Both of them absolutely loved this match. And the Creed Brothers, they thought that they because, I was hyping the Creeds up a little bit. I'm a big Creed fan myself. And so I was telling them a little bit about the Creeds before the match. And then, they come out. They really like the athleticism. They like the fact, that they looked like they were legitimate wrestlers getting out there, and kind of doing their thing. And even that, like, for instance, there was, I think it was Brutus. He did he rolled one of, I forget which one, but he rolled, let's say, Gargano up and then kind of, or I think it was actually Ciampa. He rolled Ciampa up, kind of slipped up, and then gave was able to pin him, and then gave like a belly to back, I think it was, bridge pin to Gargano and pinned them both at the same time. It was a little botch that happened there, but like, both of my friends were kind of like, there was definitely not supposed to happen, but it kind of almost made it feel a little bit more real. And like, they actually kind of like almost appreciated that. So it was interesting to kind of get that kind of casual fan's perspective on it, because I was in a way, like, even though I enjoyed the match and both tag teams are, I'm huge fans of both DIY and the Creeds. I had some of those same thoughts as you, Wade, but then watching from the casual fans' perspective, they didn't see any of it. They just saw this like spectacle of a match, and right up to the finish, it actually had them hooked like 100%.
Yeah, and I think that is every fan can enjoy any match that they want. It's not for me to say they should enjoy it. But I'll stand by that it felt like a needlessly overly complicated mess at times that I picked up on. It's the type of match I don't think the wrestlers would be happy with, or Paul Levesque. Maybe they think it's a success, but I think they looked lost and frustrated. Maybe frustrated is overstating it, but lost and concerned and trying to regroup multiple times. But it is, it's big spots and drama. And so, I'm not saying it was I haven't used the word bad match. You know what I mean? Like, it's just sometimes a match can be really good and exciting, but it's just counterproductive because it's overly convoluted and at times looks like it's about to fall apart. And that's why I use the word funky, not awful, not a bowling shoe ugly, but funky. However, all that said, because I don't want to dwell on that too much, but it was kind of a fun discussion to have because it is. I loved having your friends give kind of their perspective, you sharing that with us. But I didn't know who was going to win, because Cole said at the beginning, Gargano and Ciampa had never been to WrestleMania. I'm like, okay, this can go two ways. Obviously, either they're going to win, and it's going to be the story of the match, they're going to WrestleMania, or they lose, and then that's a story, which WWE is also good at telling, which I was intrigued with both stories. And as Steve brings up, as Steve is one of them, there's a lot of people who are Creed Brother fans, and the Creeds are, I think, in for a big push. And so I'm like, I could see the Creeds losing and it being a little, not a setback, but like, your time will come, just not quite yet, no big deal. Or we're pushing you hard and you're going to have a WrestleMania moment. I think Gargano and Ciampa are a better fit for the match at WrestleMania, the format. And I think it's fine. I don't think there's any rush for the Creeds. So I was with Bron Breakker. Like, everyone's like, why are they calling him up? I'm like, because they don't need a shortstop yet. As Triple H says, when they need a shortstop, they'll call up a shortstop. But right now they need other things. You don't want to throw someone on the field if you already have a shortstop on the field. And Bron can be any position. That's just arbitrary. It's like, yes, he's ready. And when they decide to push him, he'll get over. But don't throw him on the roster when there's not room for him. There's no rush. There's plenty of time. Let's do this right. And that's kind of how I feel about the Creeds too. Steve, I said a lot there. Back to you for any follow-up.
Oh, well, just as a sidebar, and maybe you might be biased about this, Ray, because I know you're a Vikings fan. God, did I hate those Detroit Lions-style all-gray outfits that the Creeds had. Wow, those were ugly. I like the more college wrestling tights things versus these. This thing was just hideous, but oh well.
Yeah. I was fine. Didn't have strong feelings either way. Nate, I think I'm hearing some background noise. I don't know if you can mute or not.
Oh, sorry about that.
Yep. Steve, anything else you want to bring up?
Yeah, a couple things. First of all, I really loved the fact that Pat McAfee, who I dumped on multiple times previously, is kind of he's improving, and that sometimes that's all you can ask, whether it's on the microphone or in the ring. He is, you could tell he's working on his craft. I like the fact that sometimes he'll be rooting for the heel, and sometimes he'll be rooting for the face. Frankly, when Becky took that spot off the ladder through the table and McAfee started jumping around like Elmo Wright, I really laughed out loud. I mean, that was a very funny spot. I don't know if maybe he got in the way or just he was being over-exuberant. But, I mean, he's starting to grow on me a little bit. Is he going to be a Hall of Fame announcer ever? No, but maybe he doesn't have to be because he's working right next to one. Also, I think Brock is just such an egomaniac that he refuses to not want to be cheered because people are still cheering him. And I know this is not like Brock Lesnar versus Bill Goldberg way back when the crowd decided one day who they were going to cheer for. But this is a situation where, God, all he had to do was when he said, I grew up in Memphis, I worked in Memphis, in Tennessee, and I hated every minute of it. It would have been so easy. But no, he was so busy sucking up the adulation, he just couldn't stop himself. I mean, maybe he's too big of a star in movies and otherwise to really be an effective storyteller, a credible storyteller in the ring anymore. And I know the days of kayfabe are history. I just wish that he would just really buy into it versus wanting to really get the cheers no matter what.
And let me say something too, Steve, about this kayfabe history. Most people in 1978 didn't think pro wrestling was real. If you read Fall Guys, which was written in like the 1930s, they had all kinds of clips in newspaper articles saying, you know, the so-called sport of pro wrestling. Kayfabe has been dead for 120 years. Like, nobody's watched pro wrestling. Not nobody. The media has been skeptical, but fans have always been skeptical and known something was up, but they talked themselves into believing because they wanted to and because the wrestlers acted as if it was real. Some didn't clue in their wives to how things were going on. The kayfabe was more in the households than it was with wrestling fans in that sense. So to me, saying kayfabe is dead, I get it. People have access to the internet, and there's all these on-record interviews. I started it. The Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter had the Torch Talk series, and it was the first time there was any ongoing series of interviews with wrestlers and promoters and managers talking openly about the business. When I started doing that in the late 1980s, it had never been done before, and it was like – kind of a big deal that people were willing to share with a journalist behind the scenes stories of booking changes and all that stuff, all the politics. So when people say kayfabe is dead, and I don't do this every time I hear it, but I see this as a little opening because of what Cody was doing. The goal, you're not insulting. I remember interviewing Ed Farrar 20 years ago. And he was like, well, since all the fans know it's fake, we can't pretend on TV it's real. And Ed's great. I really enjoy his insight. I think he's a smart guy, but I've never disagreed with the statement more. Fans have always been skeptical. They didn't know in the granular detail like they know today because of all the wrestling books and the internet and all that stuff, podcasts like this, newsletters. But they still want to watch a show where everyone with a straight face is pretending it's real, just as happens when I turn off wrestling and turn on a different show. I don't want actors winking at the camera and talking about rivalries over who the director is supposed to be or not be. I just want a show that pulls me in. And so I still think from opening to closing credits, so to speak, even though there aren't any on wrestling shows, that everyone should be acting like it's as real as wrestlers who lie to their wives about how real it was in 1973 did. And I think it's a better product. And you're not insulting the audience. In fact, you're insulting the audience to not give them that immersive experience by treating it real. So that's a little sidebar. It's kind of parenthetical. I try not to do this more than like once or twice a year, but this is a good case of it because it plays into what I really liked about Cody is that he made the fans feel like he was sharing with them, we know what's going on here, but did it in a way that didn't undercut everything that's truly real about what's happening. And he didn't ever say, well, someone besides me is going to decide who wins and loses. Like, he didn't go that far. He just said there's a term called a heel, which is the jargon behind the scenes for bad guy. That's not breaking kayfabe. That's just introducing a synonym. Like that doesn't hurt anything to bring up on television. It doesn't expose anything or take people out of the moment. It's almost kind of calling out Rock for pandering by trying to score points with fans by using an insider term that isn't typically brought up. And so, again, that it kind of goes full circle. That's why Cody is making you believe in a story that is fictionalized. Like, his dad didn't feel like he had this big empty spot in his soul because he didn't win the WWF title. Dusty was the NWA champion. He was a booker. That's not reality. It's plucking a couple things that really happened and then blowing it into something that's convenient for a story they're telling in 2023 and 2024. But people are buying into it because with a straight face, they're working you into believing that it's really a thing that means everything to Cody. Not that winning at WrestleMania doesn't mean everything to Cody, but a lot of this other stuff is like kind of embellished because that would be up for the bad guys. And Dusty was an NWA guy, a territory guy. So anyway, a few points there. Steve, you want to reply to any of that or respond?
Well, I think you make a good point. It's not unlike a show called, which I don't know if you've ever seen a show called Abbott Elementary that comes on ABC. Outstanding, Wade. It's outstanding. It's done in an office like The Office where they're looking at a camera and almost talking fourth wall. And they're not pretending that it's not a show, but at least they're not treating you as if you're an idiot when you watch it. You buy into the entertainment. One last thing. I just have to say, I thought that Nia Jax-Becky Lynch match was great. J- just presented really well. Now, I'm hoping when they go to Netflix that they won't feel compelled to bleep out holy S when the crowd starts chanting it. They'd like to put down on the pay-per-view network.
I know.
You know, because he can say asshole, but we can't hear holy S. Come on. Oh, wait a minute, because that was in the script, holy asshole. Sorry. But I just thought it was great. Nia Jax is never going to be mistaken for Serena Deeb anytime, but it was really just a well-played match. And anybody who watches wrestling, like you were saying, and you know, doesn't want to pretend it's not real, of course we all know what the reality is. Let's not pretend that those people don't take a beating, because there were some spots that if you're an inch off, somebody's going to go to the hospital. Simple as that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nate, what'd you think of the main event?
I'm going to preface this with, I am not a major Nia Jax fan, and I am really not a fan of last man / women's standing matches. Because a lot of times I feel like they're a little anticlimactic. I really enjoyed this match. I thought Nia and Becky put on, they have great chemistry anyway, and that showed here tonight. I did think that, Nia kind of slowed down a little bit in the middle of the match, maybe a little winded or something like that. There was a spot where Becky comes off the turnbuckle and Nia swings a chair at her, and it looked like Hulk Hogan was swinging the chair. And I mean that as in like very, very gingerly. Just there's a couple things like that that I noticed. But other than that, I thought the story they told was really, like, really well done. They had to improvise a little bit with the whole table not kind of wanting to cooperate there. And I think they worked around that pretty well.
WWE's got to have a class for wrestlers on how to set up these dinner tables.
I know, right?
There's you extend the legs, but then there's little slide braces. You got to do that. That's important.
I know. I know. It should be how to be a wrestler 101 or something. There's at least 201. I think they did a really good job here. Becky, it by her overcoming Nia in this type of a match, Nia doesn't get pinned in a traditional sense. So you kind of, in a way, protect her there, especially with the beating that she kind of, she took after taking that leg drop off of the ladder from Becky. You've got that there. But that's going to then give Becky some real momentum going into her match against Rhea. She can kind of use that, because that was the part of the story tonight. Something that Nia even brought up. Becky has never beaten Nia, so now she has conquered Nia, and Nia is not easily conquered. So if she can conquer Nia, who also has already conquered Rhea at one point, at least I know she's taken her out. I don't know if she actually has pinned Rhea, but I know she's like, been gotten a visual win anyway over Rhea. I think that's going to give her some momentum and at least some talking points going into WrestleMania.
Yeah, mentioned, Nia Jax won't be confused with Serena Deeb, nor should she. Nia Jax is a completely different role as a monster heel using her size and viciousness. And pro wrestling doesn't have to be all Will Ospreys fighting Will Ospreys. You can actually have different body types, different styles of matches. The goal of a wrestling show isn't to have, 4.5-star matches start to finish. It's about telling stories and having different types of battles, like Gunther Sammy, for instance, which we'll get to, which was one of the highlights of the show. Sammy and Gunther could probably go out and say, we're going to have a 5-star match, but they actually might want to tell a story that doesn't fit the parameters of what gets 5 stars, tells a better story than just packing in as many high spots and near falls and kickouts and thus holy shit chants as possible. And that's what Nia Jax is in the business of. She's doing the best she can, I think, what she's able to do, but she's not going to be able to do a lot of the things that other women do, but you want to lean into the things you can do. I respect, I'll throw it to you, Steve, in a second. I respect the bigger wrestlers who work big man, big woman style more than those who just try to impress by showing, hey, look, I can do what these small guys do. Well, why? The small guys are leaping off the top rope and doing flips to make up for their lack of size and power. It was cool that Bam Bam Bigelow could do it, but I don't think it I think he could have been an equally big star if he wasn't out there trying to prove he could do cartwheels, because I think that kind of actually undercut, even though he's renowned for it, and it was impressive, I think it kind of undercut what could have been a more sinister, vicious character. And I feel that way about a lot of big guys. Even Matt Morgan, you know, felt like the video game who got all the moves of all the wrestlers, and he can do all of them. And it's like, well, right, but who are you? Instead of just showing out that you can do all these moves. He's an amazing athlete, but I don't think people ever really figured out who Matt Morgan was. So I like curated movesets that fit your character, and Nia did that tonight, and she does that with her presentation. Steve, yeah, over to you.
I just have to say one last thing, because I know you got other callers here. I loved, oh my gosh, did I love when Rhea Ripley came out at the end. You know, when her music hit, it was awesome. And what I really loved about that, guys, is not that she ran down and started kicking the ass of somebody who was already beat up, so to speak, but that she came in, she kind of was saying, implying, listen, okay, nice fight, but I'm still waiting. And then at the very end, if you noticed, when they were jaw-jacking and she blew her that kiss, I was said, that's great. Now that's a performer versus just somebody who's going to come out there and physically hit somebody just for the sake of splattering them one more time. That was great. That blown kiss, which I'm sure you guys noticed it, was great.
Nate, you want to jump in with anything else on that? Nate, I think you're muted. Nate.
Yep. Right. Story
there
of my life. Story of my life.
Yeah,
all right. It's been a while since it's got me on this on a PW Torch show. It's usually at work. But no, I also really like the fact that she came out at the end. She, you know, like you said, she didn't come out and just immediately go in and try to attack or take a cheap shot on Becky. She's above that. Like, the way she came out was, I could take you out right now, but I'm not going to because I'm the champ, you know? And, she's got this amazing presence about her. You know, she's crossed into mainstream a little bit at this point. And it's just so cool to see the rise of Rhea Ripley, kind of how as organic as it's kind of been. And just see the success that she's had. Seeing her opposite Becky tonight, like, to close out the show, the kiss was great, but it really, really got me excited for the WrestleMania match. It's like, they're right now, they're two of my absolute favorite women wrestlers. And you know, Rhea, I mean, I've been paying attention to her since, you know, Mae Young Classic. It was the first thing I ever did for the Torch. Just cover the Mayon Classic. And so I've been following Rhea since then, and y'all through NXT and everything. And it's just so cool to actually see her get to this spot opposite one of the biggest names in pro wrestling right now, Becky Lynch. I think this is going to be one heck of a match come WrestleMania.
All right. Very good. Steve, anything else you want to bring up?
No, I think that's it, guys. I appreciate it. Great show as always. I'll keep in touch, and I'm trying to see if I can't get some tickets for that SummerSlam, which is coming to Cleveland, as I'm sure you've heard.
Oh yeah.
And
so, maybe I could
make one of those in-person reports. But we're a few months off for that, so we'll go from there. So.
Yeah, well, let's check in when we get closer. Appreciate it, Steve.
All right, thanks, guys. Have a great show.
Yeah, you bet. By the way, is there anything, Nate, about Rhea Ripley that you've seen on the main roster that surprised you based on what she did in NXT?
I think, honestly, just how comfortable that she's finally gotten, I guess, I'm going to say in her own skin, because I've seen a lot of interviews and things with her, you know, just saying that she's finally comfortable, you know, with this character, and kind of portraying who she actually is, you know, coming up. I mean, if you go back and watch the Mae Young Classic, the first one anyway, she was this blonde Charlotte Flair kind of lookalike, and you know, she kind of just blended in with everybody else. The second Mayhem Classic, she wound up you know, kind of embracing, you know, the inner I can't remember her real name right now, but the inner Rhea Ripley, I guess, and you know, became kind of, you know, kind of started to become the character that she is now. But even through her, the end of her NXT run there, and her feud with Charlotte that bled over into WrestleMania when the NXT women's title was on the line, there was still like, I felt like something missing with Rhea. And joining Judgment Day with Dom and everything, that was the missing piece. She just feels so comfortable in her own skin on the main roster. I think that's the biggest difference between NXT and everything going on on the main roster. She was great in NXT, but I think she's finally found, like I said, found that comfort zone, which has allowed her to go from good to great.
All right, very cool. Our number is 347-215-8558. If you want to be on the show when you call, please push 1. You can also email us, wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. All right, we'll go to Freddie in Los Angeles, who's from Texas. Freddie, welcome. What's on your mind tonight?
Yo, what's up, Wade? I promise I'll take a paragraph break this week.
Yes, thank you. Remember last time? Yeah.
I promise it was just caffeine. I thought,
and
yeah,
you know, and called in a while, so you had a lot to say.
Yeah,
and less,
that as well.
Less of the time. Yeah.
I thought the Cody Rhodes promo was off the charts, and I just had to call in to sort of check my own rating of the promo, because I texted two of my friends and I said, I think Cody Rhodes just gave the promo of his life on Raw. You know, the LDS comment was funny, you know, cut through the lines, you know, him saying, you know, hey, Rock, you know, yeah, you're on Mount Rushmore, but, you know, after WrestleMania, you'll be Roman side chick. I thought he just hit it for every single level. And then one of the things that I had been when watching Rock, and I really enjoy Rock, but just seeing it, I could just tell that with his delivery towards Cody, there's just something a bit more visceral. And you kind of spoke on it earlier. There's just something a bit more personal in it. You know, it sort of felt like not only am I, you know, trying to build up this match, but I really am pissed off at you, Cody, for you know, taking my spot. And I know there's ambiguity about, you know, which direction they were going to go in. Type thing. I honestly believe that, you know, they were going to go The Rock, you know, versus Reigns, and then, you know, because of the fan, you know, reaction online and, you know, and everything, that they changed it. But there felt like Rock, it was just something more personal for Cody to weave that into the promo about saying, hey, you're saying we're the crybabies. Actually, buddy, you're the crybaby. Because I thought it was just exceptional. So just only two questions tonight. The first question is, compared to all of other standout Cody promos in AEW, I guess, and in WWE so far, where does this rank?
Where does Cody's promo tonight rank, or the overall dynamic? Sorry, I just missed that aspect of your question.
Yeah, his promo. Where does his promo rank amongst his other great promos in AEW and in WWE? Is this his best promo, or, I mean, where would you put it?
Oh, man. I think he's been doing a lot of good work. So, I mean, I'm going to cop out on it a little bit and say this is in the top tier of a handful of promos that I think were top tier. It'd be quite subjective to rank them, but I would not, okay. I would not, if someone said like you, maybe this is the best promo yet, I wouldn't be like, oh no, let's not go that far. Like, I think this is right there. And part of it is what you talked about, Freddie, which is there was sort of not a twinkle in his eye, but like almost like a twitch in his eye. This intensity of, Rock, don't walk in and say you're saving us. Jesus, you're not even paying attention. Like, we're doing just fine without you. You're getting in the way of a story we're telling. And there was that revealing interview with Cody, and I drew attention to it in the Pro Wrestling Torch Newsletter cover story on this a couple months back, where Cody was like, "Well, I don't think Rock wants to come in, or he said, I don't think anybody wants to come in and disrupt this story we've been telling for, you know, year and a half. Like I in my heart, I don't think anybody wants to do that, which was sort of a passive aggressive way of saying, Rock, come on, stay away. We got a good thing going. Mm-hmm. We don't need you. We don't want you. Find a different time, find a different place. And he said that in a newspaper. Cody's been honest. He's been diplomatic, but it's clear where he stands. And I mean, you know, my reporting, my sourcing is there's legit, you know, legit tension. At least there was, and I think there still is. And it's bleeding onto television. Bleeding makes it sound like it's an accident, or it's like everyone's embracing it. But again, Cody and Heyman and Seth, I'll bet on them because they're not Rust. Rock's nickname should be Rusty Rock. You know, I mean, he's not sharp. Just like when he came in with Cena. He's not sharp. He's got Gewurz doing his work for him, and I think Rock's like, Brian, you're smart. Tell me what to do. Then I'll go be Rock, and I'll be a charisma machine, and you give me material, and we'll be good. And then, you know, but like Cody's out there going, oh, all your TKO yes men telling you how great you are, and with, oh, look at how muscular you are. I mean, that's just – I mean, not that Cody won't be there someday, and we'll see how he handles it if he turns into a Hollywood star or just turns into – you know, an even bigger pro wrestling star than he is. It's tough to be not be. It's tough to not change and lose your kind of grip on reality. After all the time, all the money Rock has, all the pressure he faces, and all the yes men surrounding him. I mean, it's just it probably would happen to a lot of us. So you know, it doesn't mean Rock's a bad person, but I'm calling a spade a spade. You know, Cody seems to have his feet grounded a little more in the reality of what's going on, and he seems to be calling out Rock for it because he has a pretty clear vision for it. I don't know how much Heyman is contributing to this or if Heyman is like, oh, we better edit that, and Cody's like, I want to say this. I mean, I don't know that dynamic at all. Same with Seth. But they keep delivering good stuff, and whatever Rock did on Friday felt like it was in this other world, more kind of in Gewurz land than eye on the ball, let's sell a match. Let's immerse the fans and let's make sure the heels get booed. So I don't know. I mean, this was great from Cody, and that edge, more than a little edge, the pretty consistent edge to everything Cody said and the way he said it and the way that piercing look into the camera. It felt real. It pulled me in, Nate.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, you know, kind of your point on The Rock, you know, one of the things that came to my mind as you were talking is, so not this past SmackDown, but 2 weeks ago, you know, as I said earlier, Kelly Wells and I filled in for Wade, you know, on the post show. And at the end of that show, or the last half hour of that show, was the Bloodline and a face-to-face against Cody and Seth. And in that half an hour, they had like 20 minutes of entrances, like 7 minutes of stare down. And finally, when they actually get into like the meat and potatoes of the actual, like, you know, content, we're about 30 seconds away from, you know, 10. I'm on the East Coast, 10 o'clock. And they hadn't really said anything yet. And the show just ends with The Rock slapping Cody and then Cody slapping The Rock. Or other way around. It really felt like The Rock was milking things so much, and it got to the point where you just ran out of time, and they had to just, I don't know if they had to improvise. I don't know if the two slaps was the way that the show was supposed to end, but you know, my roommate was watching with me, and again, he was also watching me tonight, but you know, he's not a big, I just moved in. So it's not like him and I watch wrestling all the time. He probably will be watching me a little bit more, so you know, he's not watching all the time, but even he was like, that seemed weird, like the show just ended on that. The Rock does not seem nearly as sharp as he once was. Even like you mentioned, when he came back to do those couple matches with Cena, kind of very similar vein. It does just kind of seem, I don't want to say like going through the motions, but you know, very much like you said, you know, Brian's just coming up with some few things to say, then The Rock's trying to go out there and just be entertaining. And it does kind of seem like it's undercutting, quite a few other things on the show.
Yeah. And I mean, for people listening to the post show who are listening to this and didn't watch Raw, I mean, Cody kind of came out and said, there's this combustible element named The Rock who's complicating things. I mean, that could just be overhearing them at dinner, like when they're not, when the cameras aren't on. Like, you could imagine Cody going, yeah, Rock's been this combustible element that's complicating things. And then he said, yeah, Rock went on Instagram and followed up with, quote, an extremely entertaining rock concert, just mocking him for being entertaining but not actually selling the match. And then he calls him out too bad. He doesn't want to be at Raw, which, you know, I mean, that's a little bit of a cheap shot. I mean, nobody expects Rock to be on every TV show. And then he said, yeah, there's heels like Bobby Heenan, Michael Hayes, Arn Anderson, Superstar Graham, Ric Flair. But I don't, Rock, I don't think you're a heel. I think you're an asshole. And he said it not like jovially. He said it while snarling. Like you're an asshole. And McAfee under his breath goes, jeez. And then, you know, to say, oh, Rock's mocking me for tearing up, talking about my story. And Cody's like, well, you're the crybaby. You're the one who's crying behind the scenes about the fans booing you. And you cried to your buddies on the TKO board. And I need to save WWE. This would be good PR for Rock, but I'm going to save WWE. And then that's when Cody says, look, at this house, we sure as hell don't need saving. And then he makes fun of his Gucci shirt, you know, out of touch with the people. And says, oh, all those executives talk about how big your muscles are, but they're yes men. They don't tell you the truth, so he will. I mean, it's just kept going, you know, and you're a whiny bitch. And then he talks about Rock's mom kindly after Rock, you know. So, yeah, I mean, it was just one thing after another. So, I mean, and oh, and he even stood up for Seth, you know. He helps carry your company, Rock. You should respect him. So he's looking out for his friends. The LDS thing, I mean, I'm sort of, whatever, ambivalent about that. But then going, congrats to Brian Gewirtz for that nickname, the final boss. So they're even mocking that because, you know, Rock had to concede he's the tribal chief. So now it's like, oh, you're the final boss, which is fine, especially if they're going to build to Roman versus Rock. And then you got the final boss versus the tribal chief. I mean, you can just see the poster now. So, I mean, I'm recapping that because I think, you know, a good number of people listen to our post shows but don't necessarily see Raw and kind of count on us to catch them up. That's what Freddie's raving about. That's what I'm saying cut close and had an edge to it. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's worth underlining and restating some of those things, Freddie, just to kind of make our collective point here how good that was.
Yeah, the only – and this is a small aside, or just a small – the only thing I would change, maybe it's being nitpicky. Damn, why couldn't the promo just have ended there? Let it breathe, you know? And then the interaction with Paul Heyman happens, I don't know, backstage, you know, or something else, you know? But I thought if the promo just could have, like, the segment could have, his music hits, whatever, you know, and then the next segment, him and Paul Heyman, I thought that would have just made it pop even more. But anyways, that's just a little like nitpicky thing. My other last question is, what are the chances you think that Becky and Rhea headline night one? What are the chances that they go on last night one? And I'll listen. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks. Night one is going to end with The Rock. there's no way, right, Nate?
Yeah, there's no way. I mean, the most casual fan that, you know, like WrestleMania draws in a lot of different people. And, I mean, The Rock, love him or hate him right now, he's going to draw people in. He's the biggest name on the card. He's one of the biggest names in the world, really. Everybody knows Dwayne The Rock Johnson. So, yeah, it's he's got to go on last.
Yeah, he doesn't have to. He's just going to. I mean, he also has to. But you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Let's be realistic, you know.
Oh, no, yeah. Just,
and it's unfortunate.
And stuff.
Yeah, I mean, he has the power. And I think as Cody's expressing, Rock thinks, of course he's a main event. He's not going to magnanimously. And by the way, he should go on. I mean, he really should go on last. But there's nothing wrong if Becky and Rhea go on last. That's a WrestleMania-worthy closing match. If it's the biggest match if it's one of the two biggest matches of the weekend, it just isn't. And I think Seth and Drew would likely headline if Rock were not wrestling on night one. But I think Becky's a big enough legacy female star, and Rhea is, you know, top of the division right now and rising. So I would be fine with that too, but it's not going to happen. I mean, you can't have Cody and Seth and Rock and Roman and, you know, the Bloodline or not the Bloodline and not close out night one with that. So Cody and Reigns get to have breaking rights forever that they headlined two nights of WrestleMania back-to-back nights.
Well, so. They could even say they've wrestled three nights back-to-back because they wrestled was it the second night? Was it Cody
yeah,
and...
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So yeah. Three, yeah.
Yeah, really. Yeah, good point. All right, 347-215-8558. If you call, push 1. We'll keep checking the phone lines here, but I want to get to an email from JB from Detroit. Hitting some topics we haven't hit yet, so this is a good thing to bring up now. Was a heel turn for Candice LeRae really ever explained? It seemed like she went from a smiling babyface one week to insulting her opponents, dead family members, and laughing at injuries the next. Cole's kind of explaining her side of it without defending it. Nate, what do you think of this, having watched Candice LeRae's journey in NXT, of course, in a granular way during her NXT run?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big Candice LeRae fan. You know, love what she's been, you know, love what she's been able to do in NXT and WWE. I wish they'd actually utilize her a little bit more. But I kind of almost feel very similar to JB here. I haven't really been able to, outside of what the, you know, the announcers are saying, whatever, it doesn't really feel like they've given us a whole heck of a lot as to why she's turning, unless I miss something. But they don't feel like, it doesn't feel like that anyway. You know, kind of just, it feels like, I don't want to say slipping into madness, but, you know, it's kind of almost what it feels like to me a little bit. You know, and even like Indy, like, you know, she's looking at Candice at the end of this with just kind of this confused expression on her face, you know, which I can understand is kind of part of the story they're trying to tell. You know, Indy's not quite sure either. But if, you know, the expression on Indy's face was a pretty good indicator of the expression on my face, I guess.
Okay. Number two here from JB. I'm not really sure why they had the Creeds and DIY in a qualifying match for the ladder match for the tag titles at Mania. They're both teams that I think should have been in the match unless they do some sort of second chance match to get the Creeds in. I think there's a good chance that happens. I shouldn't say a good chance because I'd have to think. Have they announced every qualifying match where there is no second chance? Or is there room? Because didn't they have two on SmackDown and three tonight? So
I think so, yeah.
So I think everyone's accounted for. So often they do that, but I don't think they can based on the way they've set this up unless they augment it. I'm kind of sure, but not 100% sure that I've covered the base of how they set this up where there isn't really an easy out. I just thought the Creeds and DIY, it was, you know, obviously they just went like, let's go steal the show. We got 20 minutes. Let's go impress everybody and pack them. I don't want to go down that road again. But I also don't think the crowd like had strong feelings emotionally for the match. And that sometimes happens in qualifying matches. There's not really a backstory. You're just kind of, hey, this will be intriguing. It'll be good athletically. And that's what this was meant to be. But again, you get into a situation where the crowd's into the spots instead of the story. And that might have been why they went the direction they did with the match. But yeah, I mean, you know, I'm sure it was kind of a tough call in deciding, you know, who to put in and not put in, but, you know, they have the story they want to tell with Miz and Truth. And I think they think that's more important than the Creeds having, you know, their first WrestleMania moment, Nate.
Yeah, I'd agree. I mean, you know, the Creeds, they're young. They've got plenty of time to have their WrestleMania moment. You know, they've got plenty of time to, you know, continue to improve. Not that I'm not trying to say that, you know, they're poor in the ring by any stretch of imagination, but you know, they're still relatively young to the business in terms of, you know, I mean, I think it's what, maybe 3, 4, or 5 years at this point under their belts. So they've got time to improve, time to get on WrestleMania, you know, DIY. Yeah, they're both starting to get up there a little bit in age, as much as that pains me to say, because I love the two of them. So it's like let's let them have their WrestleMania moment now. You know, and everything that's going on with Miz and, Truth and Regeneration X. You know, that that's been super entertaining. R-Truth is like a gold mine. So I mean, yeah, if you can kind of get him on TV and in some sort of a story that's going to be entertaining, yeah, please do it. Please do it.
Yeah, I get a kick out of Truth. I like it when it's more subtle and they don't just try to lean super hard into, we're going to be really funny this week, and him just being oblivious to who his opponents were. And like, I feel bad if he's going to face those guys, and it's right before the break. It's a good hook. You know, how's Truth going to react to the fact that he's the guy who has to face Indy Shear? And, you know, when they layer like three lame jokes on top of it, then that's where, you know, it gets lame by definition. But even the Harry thing, I don't know if that needed to be said. It just could have been like, oh, I feel bad for those guys. And it could have stopped right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Number three, is there any particular reason why Hulk Hogan is in the Bray Wyatt documentary? Were he and Bray close backstage or outside of wrestling? I was thinking the same thing when I posted the story.
So was I.
Yeah. I wrote up a story on this on pwtorch.com earlier today. And, you know, if I can help it, I don't just like cut and pasting a press release in, you know, kind of want to put a journalist touch on PR statement. And I'm like, I didn't really want to comment within a news story on it, but it's like, my mind is like, why are they re-legitimizing Hulk Hogan? You know, I mean, he shamed him. He made shameful comments when he didn't know it was being recorded, which by the way, makes it worse, not better, because it meant he thought he could get away with it. And it was more of a window into who he is and how he thinks, or what he thinks would impress people, including his son, which is sad when you're the one who raised him. And now Paul Levesque is like, yeah, let's get him back in. And I was around for the beginning of Hulkamania, pre-WWF, like as a kid. I mean, it hurts seeing, you know, learning what I learned about him and what he revealed about himself when he was in his 50s and in the thoughts and prejudices that he had. But yeah, I mean, he is an icon, and there's the argument, oh, separate the artist from the art, but you don't have to go out of your way to like feature him arbitrarily in this. And yeah, I just, of all the good things Levesque has done, you know, from a culture standpoint on air in NXT and in the takeover era and now this, since taking over for Vince, trying to reintegrate and sort of whitewash almost Hogan's past is disappointing. Nate, sounds like you're verbally nodding along.
Yeah, no, 100%, 100%. Like, you know, I saw the commercial for the Wyatt documentary tonight for the first time. I don't know if it's the first time they've aired it tonight, but it's the first time I saw it anyway. I heard about it earlier in the day. But yeah, when Hogan came on, that was the first thing that went to my mind was, what does Hogan have anything to do with Wyatt? I mean, obviously, I'm sure, you know, he knows his dad pretty well and things like that. So there's that. And, you know, maybe he knew him as a kid or something because of IRS. But other than that, that's the only connection that I can potentially make. So I don't know if there's actually a legitimate reason to have him in the documentary, or if it's just like, hey, let's get Hulk Hogan in here because everybody knows who he is. And I don't think that's a good enough reason to just kind of justify bringing him back after everything. There's no denying what he did for the business and in WWE and all of that. But I don't know. I personally still can't get past a lot of, you know, what he said. I don't really think it belongs in the type of environment that WWE is trying to, kind of develop and nourish backstage, especially right now with everything going on with, you know, Vince and that lawsuit and everything. I don't know why you'd even try to take the chance of having some sort of an issue again. I don't know. I'm not in that position, I guess. I'm not the decision maker, but I don't know. I wouldn't be trying to glorify him, that's for sure.
JB also says, and this is good, it's a little different perspective on the Cody promo. Overall, I thought that Cody's promo connected with the crowd tonight, but I had a few quibbles with it. I thought that bringing up the term heel and proceeding to go on about it for a few minutes was a bit of excess. Secondly, I thought that he dropped too many gotcha lines with bitch, little dick syndrome, and Roman's side chick. Then Seth just gloms onto it in his promo later in the night. So I think he brought up heel because Rock did, and I just don't think Cody could resist trying to co-op Rock's attempt to get himself over by sort of crossing that line into insider jargon to try to curry favor with insider fans who think, hey, I'm leveling with you and the other guys aren't, or, you know, whatever the motivation is, and something along those lines. And it was a perfect segue into, you know, you're not a heel, you're a dick. I to me, that worked. The LDS, as I said, I'm sort of ambivalent about. It's not quite, you know, Diarrhea Duane, but I don't even want to go back to that. I'm glad that they dropped it. Roman's side chick, yeah, I mean, that wasn't my favorite either. And pretty much, I think if we can just eliminate the word bitch from professional wrestling for like 2 years, just to force everyone to be more creative, I'm all for it, especially with women, but even guys. Nate, what do you think about JB's points?
I mean, you know, I think, you know, in a way he's got a, you know, definitely has a point, but I don't know. I still think Cody went out there and delivered, you know, one of the better promos that, you know, we've seen in a while. Like, it heartfelt, it felt like he was going out there and having a conversation with his friends, kind of, you know, and kind of start trying to psych them up and then kind of cutting a wrestling promo, I guess, you know, more authentic and things like that. So I kind of give it a pass. But, you know, I kind of like that idea, taking the word bitch, putting it in a like a safe for a couple of years. And, you know, maybe in case of emergency, break glass or something like 2, 3, 4 years down the line. But I think that's all I got to say there.
All right. Do you think Cody is focusing too much on The Rock now that we're well within a month of Mania? I'm glad that Friday we get a Cody-Roman face-to-face, but I hope that segment really kicks it out of the park, as the Cody-Roman match is lacking a bit for me at this point. I think that's a fair comment, but I think the answer is within the question, which is Cody and Roman, with nobody else, get to focus on their match. The tag match feels a little extra in the way the term mid is used. Like, it just feels like not really needed, but Rock needed to be on the show, but the fans weren't going to have it, and so Rock's going to be a bigger person and go, all right, I'll take myself out of the singles match. I probably should have been a singles match anyway. So Friday, I think, will help. I mean, it's like there's 3 SmackDowns to go. So I think we're okay. Yeah. Nate, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think we should be fine, you know, with 3, you know, 3 SmackDowns to go. We've got 2 Raws left. They've got plenty of time to kind of tell the story. But I think it is going to be, you know, kind of nice to see the two of them face-to-face on SmackDown. Will we see no bloodline involvement? Probably not. Probably yes, rather. We probably will actually see something. I can't imagine, you know, them actually sticking to their word tonight, although they, of course, they would always say they stick to their word. Solo or Jimmy, they've got to interfere at some point. That I don't see it being completely devoid of the bloodline.
Up next, does Cody come across as a bit of a fool for trusting the bloodline won't be with Roman on Friday? I have a sneaking suspicion that Tama Tonga might debut as not technically with the bloodline yet and take out Cody. Yeah, I haven't had a chance to think extensively about what this all means and what the twist could end up being. I don't think they're going to choose somebody brand new this close out. I mean, it might be as simple as they're just going to have a one-on-one segment. No one else is there. I don't know. Any theories?
I mean, like, they could certainly go that direction, one-on-one segment. I mean, that's what everybody wants to see. So maybe that's what they give everybody and you know, to kind of hype people up for WrestleMania and try to, you know, maybe sell sell some more buys, but I guess sell some more Peacock subscriptions or whatever. That's kind of the direction that I think it might go, but that, no real major theories at this point anyway. Got to think about it, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I don't think Heyman's going to be like, psych, Solo and Jimmy are here and they're going to attack you. Like, that just seems hack. And I don't think Heyman does hack. So something else is going on, but it's fine that we can't figure it out.
Yeah. Like I said, I don't think it's just going to be, I don't think it's just going to be a one-on-one. I think there is going to be some sort of involvement, some sort of interference, but I'm really hoping it's not just Solo or Jimmy jumping over the barricade with the hoodie and you know, Samoan spiking or some, you know, somebody. I hope it's a little bit more, to give us a little bit more than just that.
Okay, so I really want to talk about Sammy and Gunther more. We'll let JB's question start that slice of that conversation, which is, who is more likely to turn over the next few months, Sammy or Chad Gable? Is it possible we get a Gable-Sammy team if Sammy loses to Gunther at Mania with a run for the tag titles? I don't think they're going that direction, but I wouldn't rule it out. I have to think it through a little more. I think it's more likely we get a Sammy turn, but I can't rule out Chad Gable. At first, it seemed like Gable was being more the heel, a bad sport, lost clean to Sammy. You know, somewhat his fault for letting Sammy recover a bit before going for the win. He wanted to win a certain way, and now he's bitter about it. And Sammy's been, you know, inspirational and certainly a strong babyface, and they're not trying to even hint at Sammy being a heel at this point. But if Sammy comes up short against Gunther, you know, you can see Sammy talking himself into the idea, I need to take a different approach if I'm going to be able to ever beat somebody at Gunther's level. And there's a viciousness, and he snaps, or, you know, whatever. There's multiple ways that you can tell that story. But Sammy can also come up short against Gunther, but have it be competitive. He puts in a good showing, and Gable is just a jerk about it, like, told you so. And fans boo Gable, and Gable drops the gimmicky stuff and the comedy, and Sammy goes, I'm going to take you out. And then they have some really good matches. Nate, what do you think?
I mean, I'd be totally down for something like that. I mean, Sammy and Gable, they're amazing competitors, so, like, seeing the two of them wrestle, I'm completely for that. You know, and kind of, I guess, to that point, too, like, you know, even tonight, Chad Gable, he, you know, in the suit backstage, not necessarily in his, you know, shoosh attire or anything like that. So, I mean, that we could maybe see a bit of a turn there. I'm hoping we see Sammy dethrone Gunther. And I say that as somebody that also could take Gunther holding the IC title to the day he retires. I'd be all for it because I really am enjoying what Gunther's doing right now. You know, as the champion and kind of this undefeated streak, longest reigning IC champ of all time. But that said, he has beaten the streak. You know, he has beaten Honky Tonk Man's record. So you could, you know, it might be time to take it off of him. Sammy being a very scrappy underdog, I could kind of see him having that match with Gunther and being able to squeak out a win and having a meaningful run with the IC title. I mean, he's done it in the past. He's, you know, as a heel, it might be fun to see him do it as a babyface. Although I would not be opposed to him having another IC title run as a heel because I really enjoyed that. I think he did some great work with that at the beginning. It was right at the beginning of COVID. Because I think, he went away with the title. They crowned another IC champion, and then he came back to train. Yeah, that's right. And then he unified the title. I enjoyed that story. I enjoyed really, like, you know, what Sammy did. Really all it kind of threw that all the way through kind of his story through the bloodline. So I would be all for him, you know, some sort of a heel turn with the title. I just don't know exactly how you get there, but I would enjoy that. I would definitely enjoy that.
All right. And, a couple of quick things, then we'll get to another call. I wonder if Seth gets annoyed that the most prominent face chants during his promos are for CM Punk lately, instigated by Drew. Drew's doing a great job keeping Punk relevant and on the topic, but yeah, I mean, I can see that bothering Seth a little bit, but I think he also understands, but, what do you think?
Yeah, maybe a little bit, but, like you said, I mean, I think he understands. He's enough. I believe he's enough of a team player to, to be able to kind of check the ego a little bit. I mean, as a wrestler, everybody's got an ego, but I think he's able to check it a little bit, kind of do what's, you know, what's, I hate to say what's best for business, to bring that back, but do what's best for business.
It's so annoying because the Pro Wrestling Torch was using that term for like 20 years before the authority co-opted it on TV.
Right?
Because it's a great term.
It is.
And now you do feel like, oh, we got to apologize for using it. It's like, we were using it before you for like 25 years or, 20 years. So, it's just, anyway, that's a side rant.
So then I'll say it unapologetically then.
Yeah, there you go. Let's do it.
There we go. But kind of to that point a little bit about Seth, like, he is the WWE World Heavyweight Champion. He's the champion of Raw. And man, he feels like, at least to me, such a background character right now. I mean, yes, he's going to be in one of the main events of WrestleMania night one, alongside Cody and The Rock and Roman. But I mean, he is the smallest player in this really right now. We'll see him and Drew obviously too, but I don't know, his story even with Drew, it just feels to me so secondary. Yes, it probably should compared, considering The Rock is involved and kind of the players involved. But I'm kind of interested actually in your take, like how you kind of feel about Seth right now and where he is, because to me, even though I think he's still in a good spot, I just I would like to see the World Heavyweight title in a better spot and almost feel like it means more than it does right now where they're placing it.
Perception. If Seth could get over without the gimmick he has, he'd be the person making fun of someone else with the gimmick he has. But he couldn't get over just in that way. Like, there's just something about him. He wrestled like a baby face, but he had the personality of a heel. So I'm going to keep wrestling like a baby face, but I'm going to play up the part of me that I'm going to play something up and exaggerate something and go over the top to make up for the fact that there isn't really a natural character there otherwise. And it's too bad because I actually think under Paul Levesque, the Seth of, 5, 6, 7 years ago would have been just fine. Like, I think Levesque would have been more comfortable pushing Seth without a gimmick and building a structure around him that made it work, but he was always in search of a gimmick. So yeah, I mean, I hope Drew wins and is the world champion, and Seth does something else. Seth's really talented, and he does come across as a guy who just has a lot of pride in WWE and the WWE style and his contributions to it. And I think fans genuinely like him. But I think there's some limitations in his presentation, and it's obviously a polarizing in that some people are really into singing a song and other people roll their eyes at the fact that he's sort of a one note character. Okay. Finally from, JB, did they really need to share WWE 2K numbers in the qualifying tag match with New Day and Alpha Academy? It just made it look as though Alpha Academy didn't really deserve to be in there, which isn't totally inaccurate. I mean, they were probably the lowest seed in the tournament. It's not really a tournament, just qualifying matches. Tozawa shouldn't be anywhere near that, but then really R-Truth and Miz shouldn't either. I mean, it's no big deal. This is not going to be the world-class assembly of, the British Bulldogs, Bret Hart, Demolition, the Rougeau brothers, the Road Warriors, and Tully NR and the Brainbusters all at once. We're not in that era. They're not putting like top tier singles guys in tag teams. It's a spot fest ladder match. So I'm fine with it. What do you think, Nate, of the numbers? I mean, so far the numbers seem fine to me. I never looked and go, what were they thinking? And I assume they'll move on from it soon.
Nope. Did the mute button got me again.
That's
got
right.
me again.
No big deal.
All right. But no, I do actually like the fact that they're doing the numbers to a point. I do play the 2K games. I still haven't picked up this one for this year. I haven't had the time yet. But I think this is the first time in probably 10 years I haven't got a 2K game a day came out. I kind of like it because, I don't know. I do like the ratings and kind of, you know, it helps to, you know, figure out who I want to play and whatnot. But in a way, I do think it kind of does hinder a little bit. There have been a few different matches. You know, there was one. Oh God, I want to say it was a couple few weeks ago with Austin Theory and Grayson Waller as a tag team, and their ratings are both in the 70s, and I forget who they were against, but their ratings were like either in the 80s or 90s, and it was like as a casual fan, you look at that and go, well, okay, they probably aren't going to win this match, they being Waller and in Theory, you know, and they didn't. So I think it does kind of hurt things a little bit. I'm hoping that they don't do it too much longer, but I do think it is kind of a fun thing to promote the game. But I think maybe after the game's been out for a couple weeks, maybe after WrestleMania or something like that, they kind of quietly put that away until 2K25.
Yes. And he closes, as always, love the show and go VIP. Thank you, JB from Detroit. Some good topics there. All right, back to the phone lines we go. We'll go to Jason from Australia. Jason, thanks for calling. Good to hear from you again. What's in your mind about tonight's Raw?
Yeah, thanks, Wade and Nate. I just tuned into your show a little bit late. Just regarding Gunther, Chad Gable, and Sami Zayn, I remember hearing an interview or reading an interview, I think Sami did, and he talked, and I think he said Triple H said to him that he sees him kind of like the Rocky character. So in this instance, it's almost like if you've watched Rocky IV, Chad Gable's playing the role of Adrian, saying, you can't beat this guy. He's too big. He's too strong. Because that's what Adrian said to Rocky when he came up against the Russian, Ivan Drago. So if Sammy's playing that Rocky character and he's the underdog, it's almost like I feel like they're borrowing a little bit from that. And, you know, I could see a situation where maybe Chad Gable, in the next coming weeks, maybe trains Sammy, you know, then tries to help him out. And then if Sammy ends up losing, we could see Chad Gable snapping. So... that's an interesting little tidbit there. But, yeah, Triple H did say that he sees Sammy as a Rocky type of character, so, you know, making him this underdog role. In regards to just a couple of other things, I thought Cody's promo tonight was great. I mean, when you're coming up against The Rock, you can't allow the Rock to steamroll you, because he can do that easily. He can do that with anyone. He's just on a different level. Cody had to bring it, and if that means he has to go certain places and say certain things, I'm all for it. You can't allow The Rock to steamroll you. And the fans don't like baby faces who just take it. That's why they've liked it when Cody Rhodes, you know, said, you know, I'm going to take this back. Like, you have to show some spine. And I found it ironic that Cody was talking about, you know, Rock talking about heels and whatnot, and Cody's wearing all black. And we never see Cody wear all black. And we know he's very particular in what he wears and how he comes across, right? So him wearing all black, the heel color, talking about heels, I believe that's his way of showing I've got a bit of an edge here too, Rock, and if I can play the heel too. So I think it's all.
Yeah.
I think that was by design, and he has to fight back against The Rock, and I think The Rock is going out of his way to sort of bring this edge out of Cody. It wouldn't surprise me if Rock's got all the respect in the world for Cody, but he feels like he just has to get a little bit of extra out of him to see something, because when Cody slapped The Rock, even The Rock said in his promo on Instagram, you finally grew some balls. You finally did something about it. I think this is all a play to try and present Cody as having that bit of an edge to him, that he's not all polished, that he's not this clean-cut baby face. So I think a lot of things they're doing by design. And just one more thing regarding the World Heavyweight title. Look, I can only talk about it the way I feel. I feel it's come across more important than ever because Drew McIntyre has made it important. It is so important for him to win this and focus on it and get his glory that I feel like he's actually put this title over more than what it could have ever been. Perhaps even more than Punk and Rollins, because I think the story with Punk and Rollins would have been sort of more personal and about CM Punk main eventing WrestleMania, whereas Drew is about winning this championship. And I think, only in my mind, I think just him talking about it in an important way and what it means to him has made this title more important. So I'm far more invested in it because of Drew McIntyre's motivations.
I like that. Nate, do you want to add anything to that?
No, I mean, I think that, I mean, it's a good point. I mean, you know, Drew McIntyre, he's I mean, not only is he's kind of going in two feuds, right? I mean, he's in this feud with CM Punk and trying to keep CM Punk relevant while he's off TV, but he's also, you know, going for the World Heavyweight title, and he's which is, you know, obviously one of the most important things to him right now. And he's making it, I guess his overall presence anyway is completely undeniable at the moment. So it probably does feel like the World Heavyweight title is kind of in the most like meaningful spot that it's been in a while. I mean, that's not to say Seth hasn't done a great job with, his run as World Heavyweight Champion. But, I do think it's time for a bit of a change. And, Drew's absolutely been killing it right now.
Jason, what else?
I enjoyed the show. So, I mean, I watched it a little bit late. So I kind of, I know this is sacrilege, but I kind of fast forward through the matches and get to the end to see what happens. And I just think, I don't know what it is, Wade. I don't know what you've been hearing, but I mean, I enjoy the matches, but if I have to rush through things, I'll rush through them, right? But I don't know what it is, but the promos and the way the wrestlers are talking, it's just so much better. And I don't know what you're hearing backstage or whatnot under Paul Levesque, but they just seem to be not talking as wrestlers, more natural, more free-flowing. There doesn't people aren't worried about making sure they're getting the right inflections and doing this and doing that. Just the promos, I think, that we're seeing from a more natural way of speaking, I think they've never been better. And it's almost sometimes the wrestling gets in the way of the promos, because the promos, it's just, I don't think we've ever been in an era where the talking has come across so just believable in the characters. And I think, has this been a, do you feel this has been a concentrated effort by the new regime?
I do, but I also just think they're gifted with some really good talkers right now. But I think they're given material and direction to work with also. I think it's a combination of a variety of things. Nate, do you mind muting a little bit? We're hearing some background noise again.
You know what? The mute button strikes again because I thought I was.
Oh, funny.
No, you know what? I've got to take responsibility of that because I'm actually in a shopping center at the moment, so I apologize for that. That's not Nate. I'm bailing you out, Nate. This is all the man from Australia. Sorry about that.
Jason, I think what we see with Gunther, for instance, which is just magnificent, is
an example of the culture.
Yes. And the culture of the way wrestlers are being produced is that everyone who's getting extended mic time have a distinct character. And so I just think Levesque is like a big, and he's got some good supporting writers too. They're just like really kind of nerdy into like the detail, the granular detail of like, okay, this is JD's character compared to Dom, and they think it's true. And Damian Priest, he's disgusted by this, but he's sort of on board for this. And all the wrestlers just know where they're coming from. And so that's, I think, what's working, is the wrestlers know who they are, and they're put in a position to win, to do things the right way. You know, Shinsuke's put in a winning context. Chad Gable, I think, is being produced better now. So, I mean, it could go on and on. But Gunther is so good, but Gunther is not trying to score points in ways that a lot of wrestlers try to score points over the last 15, 20 years on TV. He's out there doing a timeless, old-school, arrogant, smug character who dresses the part but does it in a different way than Cody, for instance. And he's brilliant. And then Sammy, they're just tapping into Sammy at heart. I mean, they're taking an aspect of Sammy and in real life and making it easy for him to play this role. So yeah, on and on. I mean, I think there's a lot of credit to go around, but they have some real talented people, but they also are being given a really good framework and direction. Go ahead, Nate. And then I'll throw back to you, Jason.
Sure. Sorry. One other thing that just kind of crossed my mind while you guys were talking is or the wrestlers, they don't have to go to work anymore and wonder what childish thing Vince might have them do this week. You know, we're not playing to an audience of one anymore. We're actually playing to an audience of the millions. And I think that's that point right there is really one thing that has kind of overhauled the entire product. You're not just kind of trying to please Vince. It's now, what can we do for the fans?
Yes. Jason, your thoughts.
Yeah. We would often hear from creative writers say that Vince would come in and say something like, oh, no one remembers that. Or, you know, like, it'd be like, they just want to move on. But I have a feeling that under this regime, they're like, no, are going to remember that. And it's up to us to reference it in order to move this story forward. So that's how you keep long-term fans, because if every result matters and everything that is said matters and they refer back to it, even when Chad Gable said a few months ago, he said, I swear to God, I'm going to beat you. He referenced that in his promo because, you know, if you're going to swear to God to do something, then you better do it. And the fact that he said he was going to do it and he hasn't done it, it actually has meaning. But the fact that I went back to that, it's almost like they feel like we have to reward the fans for paying attention, and we're going to reference things that we've done before, and we're going to own everything. We're going to own everything. We're going to own every win. We're going to own every loss, and we're going to reference that back in future feuds and futures matches we do. And look, they're not always going to get it right, because you're riding 52 weeks a year, and it is professional wrestling. You've got injuries and whatnot, and things change. But I'm just, like I said, Wade, when I first started calling back to the show, I'm giving them a lot of slack with what they're doing, and I'm very, very happy, because I feel like they're actually going out of their way to try and present a more, say, intellectual product, if you like, and reward long-term viewers. And I think they've made this effort, they're making this effort more than what they've ever done before, and I appreciate that. And some people would say, well, they should have always been doing this then, but granted, they haven't, but now they are. And I think this is why, I think the fans pick up on this. They might not be able to articulate it in a certain way, but I think it plays subconsciously. And I think this is why they're getting a lot of people to their events, you know, sellout after sellout. I think there's just a genuine feel that this company is for the fans and they're listening to them. LA Knight, even with his push that he's gotten, he never would have gotten this push under a Vince McMahon regime, because Vince would have been like, they're only cheering for him a little bit, or eventually he'll die out. Well, that may or may not be true, but at least they're going with it. So this is why I feel there's this overall goodwill with the company.
And I think the culture of, we're not going to say those things don't matter, no one remembers it, which was, you know, Vince McMahon just going, things I'm not good at aren't important. And if I don't have a good memory, then I'm going to say it's not important to have that our stories have a memory. And not that WWE is perfect in that regard, but you can see it in Michael Cole. You know, he's either given material or doing the research himself or has good recall. And the things he's pointing out, you know, under Levesque, it's just a different style of announcing. It's embracing statistics and numbers and knowing the fans are going to kind of geek out for that stuff. And now other people are paying attention. Other people feel it's worth showing up with ideas like that. And it enhances the product. Jason, anything else you want to bring up before we move on?
Yeah, just quickly, but you have to do that, because that's what a lot of top quality TV shows do. Like, everything matters. They cross their T's and they dot their I's. So if you don't evolve with your writing, no matter what show you do, people are going to be like, well, I'm not being intellectually stimulated enough, or, well, if that doesn't matter, I'm not going to pay attention to that. By force, they have to do that. That's, you have to evolve in the way that you present TV, because we're in an era where there's so many good TV shows. If you don't evolve in that way, then you're going to get left behind, and you're not going to maintain your audience, and you're going to lose them. So, well, that's my opinion on it, but I'll let you guys get back to it, and look forward to SmackDown. All right, thanks, Wade. Thanks, Nate. Have a great night.
Great. Thanks, Jason. Glad you checked in. All right, we have another email. I want to wrap up sort of quick here. The producer's got – I got to get this show to him quickly. But Stephen Baltimore added, what percentage of Cody's remarks do you think are Triple H getting shots in at The Rock? Is there a not-so-well-hidden power struggle going on between Triple H and The Rock? I don't rule out that Paul Levesque is part of it, but I think he would have to be very careful about it being obvious that he's doing this, because Rock does have friends in high places. And I don't think it, I think Levesque is smart enough to know it's not in his interest to get in, excuse the language, but a pissing contest with Rock is essential as Levesque is to the product. You know, you could imagine Rock going, well, I don't know, Brian Gewirtz could do Hunter's job along with, you know, Adam Pearce in real life. You know what I mean? Like, trying to assemble his own, like, replacement group if things got heated. So, I think it's Levesque is letting it happen and has a cover story for it. But I think it's, to me, it feels like it's more personal with Cody than Levesque, to be honest. Nate, any guess on that?
No, I mean, I would defer to you on that, honestly. You know, I anything that I'd say regarding The Rock and Triple H, you know, and a power struggle or anything would be completely speculation. You know, so I don't really have anything concrete that I'd really want to elaborate on.
Yeah. All right, we'll close quick here with Azan, who says, good evening, Wade and Nate. I think Candice LeRae has the personality to pull off being a heel, and her performance in NXT has certainly proven that. What are your thoughts on her heel work so far in Raw? Does it create a problem that they've, you know, that people know about Gargano and like, sort of like Seth and Becky? They always have to kind of think, well, people know they go home to each other. Do we need their characters to be grounded and on the, and in sync? So I'll throw that in as a complication to it, but you can add any thoughts on her character.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I guess that is something that, you know, you got to think about a little bit, you know, kind of trying to keep, relationships aligned like that, because, like, you know, one for me has always been now Jon Moxley and you know, Renee Paquette, you know, is trying to reconcile the just two vastly different human beings there. Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, obviously you can do it, you know, with you know, one being a face, one being a heel, but I think you've got to completely keep them separate and try to, I don't want to say try to, like, make the fans forget that they're, you know, together, but, like, just, you know, keep them as far apart away as possible. But in terms of her heel work so far, like I said, you know, the angle so far has kind of been a little strange. Like, we haven't really gotten, like, a real strong reason for her to start kind of turning. But that said, I mean, you know, her heel work, I think, is pretty good. I personally like her better as a heel than a face. I really enjoyed what she did with The Way in NXT. You know, she, Johnny Gargano, they shot a few scenes at the house at their home. I think it was called Dinner with the Garganos,
yeah,
if I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah.
And I mean, those were some hilarious scenes. Like, you know, go back, you know, YouTube them, and if you can, you know, and you know, she and Gargano played amazingly off one another, as they should as a husband and wife. I think so far she's been doing pretty good. I'd like them to give us a little bit more story behind it.
And he also says, well, looking at your Raw report tonight and thinking about their match with Judgment Day in December, do you think the Creed brothers lack focus on TV because their in-ring work is a bit funky? You know, maybe. I mean, it's possible they're not going to WrestleMania because Paul Levesque looks at their work and says, there's a lot there, but we gotta refine things here and kind of figure things out a little bit. Maybe we're jumping the gun if we give them a mega push at this point.
It wouldn't surprise me. I mean, like I said earlier tonight, you know, their in-ring work is great, but there's still room for improvement. You know, they're still young. They've got plenty of room to grow. They've got plenty of time to get that WrestleMania moment and that payday. So, I mean, I would not rule that out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nate, is there anything else in your notes that you want to bring up from tonight's show?
I don't think I have anything else that we haven't already covered. No.
Yeah. I'm kind of getting over things to be sure I'm not missing anything too big that I want to bring up, but I think we're good. I think we're good.
Cool.
Well, very good. Nate, thank you so much.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you for having me as always. I appreciate it.
Thanks to our callers and our emailers. We'll talk to you Wednesday night after Dynamite, but before that on the Blue Logo Show, the Wade Keller Podcast, Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net. We will dive into everything going on in AEW and WWE and perhaps some other topics also. So send your emails in on any topic pro wrestling related, and we'll talk to you tomorrow on the Blue Logo Show and then back live Wednesday night.